here at the International Social Justice Commission in New York City. We are speaking with an Aussie, Caitlin Hallett. Caitlin, thank you for joining us.
No worries, it's okay.
So, what brought you all the way to New York from Australia?
So, I'm completing a policy internship with the ISJC for 12 months, and I wanted to gain a better understanding of the UN and the advocacy work that the Salvation Army has, as well as the research that the ISJC does. I also thought it was an opportunity for me to explore my calling and to, I felt God saying to me that I needed to step out, a bit like what Jesus said to Peter about stepping out of the boat onto the water and walking on the water. I felt like God was telling me that I needed to step out to something as big as New York City and really extend myself spiritually and academically as well.
Part of your work as a policy intern, you are engaging in a year-long research project with the ISJC. Can you tell us a bit about that?
So my research project is looking at food banks, so the growth and efficacy of Salvation Army food banks in developed countries. It's looking at a snapshot of some of the developed countries that the Salvation Army is in, so focusing particularly on the perceptions of officers, employees and volunteers that run food bank or food assistance programs, and also looking at how the efficacy of food banks and how we empower people through food banks, how our food banks are sustainable and how they address food insecurity. Then in conjunction with that aspect, I'm also looking at the experiences of recipients of food assistance within the Salvation Army. So people who receive food from us, how are they treated? Do they feel empowered? Do they hear about the gospel? How can we be more effective in our food assistance, which is technically food ministry? How can we be more effective in our food ministry? So hopefully the research that I'm doing will have some implications to policy or programming of the Salvation Army, and that way we can either do more research or use some of the findings to be more effective in our food ministries.
And it's so interesting the way you word that, food ministry. Like, I feel often people think ministry is I am an officer or a preacher or someone speaking on behalf of scripture to teach you something about God, but that can also be done by serving something as literal as food.
Yeah, I think the scriptures talk so much about community, fellowship, being associated with food, and especially Jesus's ministry was quite often around food and giving food to the hungry, and he spoke about it so many times as well. So I think social justice is this concrete action of caring and loving for other people and and providing for them, not just meeting their physical needs, but also meeting their spiritual needs and treating them with dignity and respect and love.
Well, based on conversations you and I have had before, I know that you know a lot about the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So that's a mouthful, even for people who work at the UN. So just wondering if you can maybe start by telling our audience what they are, and then we can go further kind of into the specifics of that.
Sure. So the Sustainable Development Goals, the SDGs, they're 17 goals and 169 targets that member states of the UN have negotiated that aim to transform our world. They really are focusing on eradicating poverty in all forms, in all places, for all people, and ensuring that people have dignity and healthy lives and healthy environments.
So, and this is part of the, they call it post-2015 agenda, right? Like, what does that mean?
So the post-2015 agenda is incorporates the Sustainable Development Goals, but also the preamble and different elements inside the document. So the SDGs are the 17 goals, 169 targets and the indicators, but there's also statements by the member states around peace and prosperity and people and uniting together, humanity uniting together.
And you say goals, targets and indicators. Can you give an example of those?
So you could say that the goal is the overarching theme.
Mm-hmm.
So the theme might be to end poverty, to end hunger, to empower women, to educate all. They're the themes, the social justice themes.
Mm-hmm.
And then under that, you would have the targets, which are specific percentages of increasing and decreasing by 2030.
Right.
And then the indicators are how do we measure this as we go. So as these goals are implemented and these targets are implemented, what are our signposts that we're actually achieving the targets to then achieve the goal?
Right. So SDGs in general, it's kind of like a roadmap to...
Yes.
To what would
so,
you say?
The way the UN would probably say it is a roadmap to transforming our world.
Mm-hmm.
So this ambitious agenda of ensuring peace, sustainability, rule of law,
right.
climate change.
Mm-hmm. And just interesting what you said there, like a lot of people have said like this agenda is really optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
What has been one of like the main responses to that criticism?
So from the UN perspective, one of the main responses has been that the SDGs are for all people. It's a universal agenda and no one will be left behind. So in previous agendas by the UN, so the Millennium Development Goals, they didn't include, they left out a lot of marginalised groups. So Indigenous people, women, disabled people, they were groups that were left out previously, whereas this agenda is attempting to be more holistic and to lift those groups that are struggling the most with poverty out of poverty.
Mm.
Whereas the previous agenda didn't do that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And the previous agenda, you said that's the Millennium Development
Goals. Yeah.
Can you just give us a little idea of what that was and how that shifted?
So the Millennium Development Goals were created by the UN with very little input from the member states, so from the government representatives of the countries and civil society, and they consisted of 8 goals that the UN was working towards,
mm-hmm.
but these goals were goals and targets and indicators for the least 20 least developed countries. So they weren't for all countries across the world, whereas the SDGs are for all countries across the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the MDGs come to a close this year,
right.
And although there have been some successes, there's also been a lot of shortfalls. And they haven't fully achieved these goals. So poverty still exists in these countries, the 20 countries. And when the goals were created, they didn't look at water and sanitation or peace and security. So they left out or rule of law and addressing corrupt governments. They left out a lot of important aspects that are key to development. So the creation of the SDGs was to ensure that these changes are sustainable, but to also really build on the MDGs.
Right. And what does that process look like? Like, as they've made that shift, like, who is involved and what is involved in getting that to change?
So, there was a conference in 2012 in Rio called the Rio Plus 20 Conference, and member states and civil society, which is NGOs, faith-based organisations, the private sector, they met to discuss what would happen with the ending of the MDGs and an early preparation. And from that point, the process of deciding the goals began. So from 2012 to now, 2015, it's been a very complex and long process. There's been very many aspects to it. So member states were able to really speak into the goals through intergovernmental negotiations, through the General Assembly and the High Level Political Forum, whereas the opportunity for civil society to speak in really came from the Open Working Group.
And so, and you say there's a lot of negotiations around like drafting this thing, but you've been at the UN like during this vital
mm-hmm.
time, like during these intergovernmental negotiations. Has there been anything eye-opening that you've experienced or something taken away from this experience, being there and actually witnessing this happening?
I think probably the biggest takeaway was seeing how civil society organizations can be involved in the processes, because the UN is, has previously, and some people would argue, is still very focused on the actions of member states and politics and diplomats. Whereas more recently with the SDGs, the processes have been more open to civil society engagement and for people who are actually at the grassroots level and on the ground to be able to speak into what's happening at a high-level UN meeting. So I think what was really eye-opening and something that I learned was at a briefing last week, which was talking about what makes advocacy effective if you're a civil society organization. Some permanent mission representatives were sharing what was effective throughout the processes, because the processes have ended and the SDGs are finalized. So they were saying that if the message that the civil society organization is speaking at the national level, at the country government level, if that's consistent with what they're saying at the UN, then their advocacy is more effective. As well as if civil society organizations know how to network between member states, and they have really good quality research from the ground. So if they're able to give a member state a couple of paragraphs or a name of a program that's been evaluated really well, they can use that to sort of support their argument when they're in these negotiation processes. So that's really the way forward. They also suggested that civil society organizations, NGOs, faith-based organizations work best if they're united around a particular theme or issue and if they're working in coalitions. So if, for example, there was a number of organizations that were advocating for the rights of girls, and they had a particular aspect of advocating on the rights of girls, maybe education, then that would be more willing to be accepted into the goals than just one organization speaking on its own.
Right. So more like strength in numbers around one, like, specific...
Yeah, topic. Specific theme or topic or social justice issue. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And before coming here, like, did you have an idea of that, or has it just been something that through, like, your own experience seeing this and being part of the committees you're on, that you really kind of felt that?
I think advocacy work is very different depending on the context and depending on the field that you're working in. So the placing of the ISJC at the top level near the UN is a unique way of doing advocacy. Whereas how you would advocate, for example, in Australia to the government would be very different. How you would advocate to your local or regional government, to your state government, would all differ to how you advocate at the UN.
Mm-hmm.
So understanding the differences, understanding the difference between maybe case-based advocacy, so advocating on behalf of an individual or a collection of individuals, versus advocating for a particular issue like human trafficking, anti-human trafficking, or violence against women, or a big broad issue that affects many people.
Mm-hmm.
The advocacy happens at different points and it takes different mediums as well. So that's probably been a big learning curve, that advocacy isn't just one sort of one way of doing something. It's like an umbrella term of many different methods.
And just on that note then, like, for Salvationists who are not in New York City going to the UN building daily, how can they contribute to the SDGs, like, in their own territories or in their own cores even?
I'd suggest that one of the best ways is to be educated around the SDGs. So if it's just having a look on the UN website and just learning about the 17 goals and the targets, if it's giving yourself... contacting the ISJC and asking for some information about the MDGs, what they were, now transitioning into the SDGs. I think involving young people, because the SDGs are aimed to be completed by 2030, So it's really young people that will be stepping up and driving this new agenda. So empowering your youth groups, your children's ministries, your young adults ministries to look at this and to be more, to act more as global citizens, to think about how they could implement the SDGs in their own communities, but also thinking about how, especially because the Salvation Army is international, thinking about how they could benefit another church, another corps, another program in another country. I'd also suggest that not just being educated, but thinking about the existing ministries and programs that are already in your corps, in your social centre, in your community, and thinking about, are we already doing a food program? Are we already doing an education program? And seeing how they align with the goals, because these countries will sign up in September to these SDGs, and it's likely that that may influence policy moving forward. So in terms of connecting with government and other organisations, the SDGs is a real point of similarity that we can draw parallels in the work. I think that it also provides an opportunity for churches and for ministry coordinators and pastors and officers to think about how there might be gaps in their community. So the SDGs, there's 17 goals and they cover a range of different themes or social justice issues. And if there's a need in your community and it falls under one of those SDGs, it might help you in terms of funding and resourcing and collaboration with other organisations if you know that it's connected to this global framework that all these countries and governments are meant to be working towards. So they're just a few suggestions of how people on the local level could use the SDGs.
And we've talked about this before too, like the Salvation Army, just based on its mandate, it's already really engaging in work contributing to the goals.
Yeah.
But it's a lot about just kind of making that connection and realizing that, like making a concerted effort that, okay, this is going to contribute to something that people, as you say, around the world are also focused on.
Yeah, I think realizing that in most cases, the Salvation Army is probably engaging in the SDGs, and we were and are engaging in programs that were about the Millennium Development Goals. So looking forward, thinking, not thinking about this being something new or something really, really different, but thinking of it as something that we're already doing, that's already existing, and something that we can come along and say that we're supporting. So it's not about reinvention, it's just about recognizing similarities.
The SDGs, they cover a wide range of social justice issues, and we know that social justice is a massive topic just with layers and layers underneath it. If you had to define social justice, how would you do that?
I would say that social justice means, first of all, social justice means different things to different people, and it means different things depending on your background. Whether that means that you've come from a university study background in a particular discipline, or your theology or your religion, what justice means. But to me, social justice is about addressing systemic and structural inequalities that oppress populations and communities and individuals and prevent them from gaining access to their human rights and having the fulfillment of their human rights, so that they can lead lives of dignity and worth and health. So I guess the idea that unfair systems are really part of, addressing unfair systems is really part of social justice work. But coming from a Christian perspective, we know that God really values justice, that God is a God of justice, and that as Christians and as disciples of Christ, that we are called to live lives that are holy lives, that are righteous lives, and that means that we engage in justice work, and that means that we are willing to address these tricky power structures or these difficult systems and navigate these things on behalf or with or partnering with other people. And I think that's something unique about the Salvation Army, is that we're really about empowering those to come alongside us and to work with us, to go to places to speak with people who are the ones that are voiceless, that don't get the opportunity to speak about what's happening, about the unfair circumstances in their lives. And I guess my kind of my point of reference is that Isaiah talks about, in the scriptures, he really talks about social justice being worship. And I think if you're a Christian and you believe that worship and prayer and discipleship and holy living are part of your walk, then you can't not engage in social justice.
Mm-hmm. Caitlin, thank you for your insights. It's been great talking to you.
Thanks, Kimberly.